And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Love in the Bloom, episode 290. We're heading to the mound for our positional reviews of the 2025 fantasy baseball season, starting with the starting pitching position, part one. I'm going to try to get through the first 40 pitchers off the board. We'll see where this one goes as we bob and weave through the top 140 ADP where starting pitchers were taken. Talk about that and much, much more. But before we get to the starting pitchers, you can find me on Twitter at BDantric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
What's up, man? Happy Halloween to you and the little one. Yep. We're ready to roll here. Banana suit is unwrinkling. It's getting ripe. It's getting ripe for Friday night Halloween. So can't wait. It's probably my favorite holiday of the year just because my kids love it so much. So stoked for that. And then obviously FPAS next week. So things are very good in the world of, I will say, Bubba and the Bloom. I'll speak for you as well.
Yep. Things are good. Things are good. We're inching closer to everything. The only thing that really stinks is we talked about it when we first logged on earlier. There's nothing on TV. We're watching women's golf because there's nothing on right now. It's the doldrums of sports at the moment. And it is what it is. That's why we're talking baseball, because that's what we do all year round. But that's the only real down part of the movie. It's Halloween. Looking forward to that one. See the excitement.
I do wish someone would dress up as a functioning iPad on Halloween night and stream the game six of the World Series. It's going to be tough to miss. That's right. I think it's right at 5 o'clock. I assume
5 o'clock. That's right when we start retreating. Yep. A good thing is we should get back by, you know, the last few innings, hopefully watching the Jays celebrate in their own home field. But I told my buddy he's got the traveling Starlink, and we have some toddler, like little kids going with us. So we'll have the pool carts. So I said we could put that bad boy in there and we could stream stuff real easy, boys. But their wives frowned upon it. No one told me no, but their wives frowned upon it. So we probably won't do it.
Oh, well, their problem.
Their problem, not mine. Yes, that's for sure. But that'll be fun. We will probably talk about that. And if you're at first pitch next Thursday, you will see us in our outfits. Not live, but that's
all. No, definitely not live. I'm not back. This thing is, I don't want to say one and done. Maybe I'll wear it next year. But, I mean, I mentioned last show, really the only reason why I'm dressing up as a banana is because my kids want to laugh at me and then put me in a blender so make a smoothie out of me. So
I like it.
Yeah,
that reminds me. I got to get the Olaf costume down from the closet. Make sure it's from a couple years ago.
Get the cobwebs off it.
Yeah, there's no way that's coming with me though. I'm looking at the amount of stuff I'm bringing to FPEZ.
You're bringing a lot of stuff. Do you? Yeah. You have. I'm not going to say gone overboard, even though I just did. You've hooked it. We've got some many trinkets and items that we are bringing. You are bringing to first pitch.
Yes, I'm looking at that right now. It almost needs its own carry-on by itself, but we'll be good. We'll be good between the golf bag and the large luggage bed. It'll be half empty on the way home, hopefully. We'll be good. Good to go.
Yeah, man.
All right, before we get in to the starting pitchers, let's talk about the World Series. Game 5, Trey Savage, filthy. But we'll go back to Game 3. We kind of talked about that the other night, the marathon that went on and on and on. Game 4. Jays come out and take care of business. Game 5, Davis Schneider lead off dong. Vladita goes deep. Tone was set, and Mr. Yesavage just followed suit. 3-2 lead, heading back to Toronto.
Yeah, super impressive that, like, I don't know, the narrative was that whoever Game 3 went on so long, whoever was going to win Game 3 is going to win the series. Super impressive for the Jays to drop that Game 3, but then come right back and win 2. On the road. So we will see. Obviously, people listening to this later on in the offseason are like, all right, guys, I know what happened in the World Series. But I did want to bring up, I tweeted this last night about Trey Savage, like, and just in terms of fantasy for next year. And this tweet actually got a little bit of run, which is something these days. It's just more like, so I said, I usually scoff at postseason numbers, like affecting next year ADP. I think we see that a lot. Like someone goes off in the postseason and everyone says, oh, their ADP is going to go up. And it kind of never does. I think Trey Savage, and I mean, see what you think. I think that has to matter for Trey Savage just because of his, unique situation in rising four levels in one season and having now a sample size in the postseason that's now bigger than his sample size in the regular season. So I think it just, I don't know. I don't want to overreact to the postseason, but I just think this is such a weird case that you need to kind of look at the whole body of work, and the body of work that Trey Savage has put together in the postseason is actually a big chunk of what we're evaluating him on for 2026. So, I mean, I'll throw it back to you. Like, do you put this postseason performance from Savage, how much does that weigh in for 2026 for you?
Oh, it helps a ton. We know we're not supposed to overreact too much to it, but with a young pitcher, he's getting more innings, which is always a plus to what we talk about for workload for next year. He's doing it against, as Joe Arrico tweeted out, he's faced the top three offenses according to WRC Plus this season so far, and he's been just fine in what's going on out there. Looked great. When you were kind of breaking that down about the regular season, postseason, it reminds me of COVID year when we had small samples and you had this postseason that was almost a whole other season for
somebody. It was a long postseason. That's right. Good call. Yeah.
Like Altuve struggled so much. I remember him big, but had a monster postseason. So what do we take going into 2021? Like when you're making project, when you started saying like that, reminds me a lot of a few years back, we were in this scenario. How do you react to it?
Yep.
There's no exact science. Like it is what it is. Like either run with it and hope it continues, or you don't. I'm going to run with it a bit. I'm not going to overpay, though, and that's the problem. I think a lot of people are now. That's the downside.
I think that's the counterpoint. Is right. Like everyone, at least for these next few months, it's going to be all you Savage. It's interesting. I tweeted. So Jenny Butler responded to the tweet. We're going back and forth, and she was like, "Yeah, I was wondering where your Savage would have gone in the meatball draft had we known what would happen." I was like, "Was he sad? He wasn't even in the majors when we did the meatball draft because he wasn't called up until September.
Wasn't even a factor yet." Yeah,
just nuts how quickly things can change.
Well, that's how stupid we are for drafting that early. But like Frank Stanfill put out a tweet this morning, Thursday morning, which kind of puts the Trey Savage thing into like perspective a little, I think, because people are going to overreact to it. But at the same time, it's like, okay, let's look at other young arms. Like, how do you approach Chase Burns, Nolan McLean, Emmett Sheehan, Trey Savage, Cam Schlittler, Jake Mizorowski? That's the ones he mentioned. But there's so many more of these young arms, which we saw all have their, like, couple-week runs of being really good. Some were longer than others. So they all kind of had a Trey Savage moment. Now, given you Savage, again, biggest age, top three offenses, maybe a little different. But they all had their moments. And which one do you care – categorize as, okay, I believe it, which one? Like, there's so many questions with these young arms. It's usually it keeps you and I away from these guys.
Yep.
But I don't know, the way we've talked position players, we'll talk some pitching today, is sometimes I think it's embracing the chaos might be better these days in certain scenarios, not all scenarios, and I'm not saying go full crazy, but when we start talking certain pitchers, at least outside of the top, maybe out of this, after this list, start taking some chances. But again, I'll have a clearer answer probably after the next couple episodes of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just an interesting exercise having now 26 postseason innings for you, Savage. Only had 14 in the regular season. It's like those 26 postseason innings and now combined 40 major league innings. That tells me a lot more than pretty much any kind of minor league sample, just because the conversion and translation of a lot of those minor league stats is always tough. So I don't know, just thought it was a really weird or just interesting kind of like one-off. I don't remember a case of really someone rising this fast but then also having so many innings in the postseason where it's like I need to kind of adjust a little bit and factor that in, while also probably not overreacting like some will in the market. And probably this entire conversation might be for naught because I'll probably end up with no Savage because he'll be so expensive. But I don't know. Just one of those cases where I think you do look at postseason, and you're right. Like, it probably hasn't been that way since 5 years ago when the COVID season.
And the last thing I'll mention on this is just wrapped up an NFBC 50 with some of the Discord folks today or yesterday. Yesterday or today.
It's done already. Wow.
It was quick. It was a quickie. 2 hour clock goes to the hour clock. It moves. Savage picks six in round 16. That I could almost stomach, honestly. That seems pretty good.
Wow.
Now that pick happened before game five.
Okay.
So now I'm curious to see where that jumps. But even if he's outside the top 10, I know it's a 12 team out of 15. I'm much more inclined to give that a discussion. That'd basically be towards the end of this top 40 we're talking about. That's where it gets. That's where the discussion begins. Do you believe he's a top 40 arm?
I was going to say that's late because Yesavage was drafted in the 14th round of our meatball, but that's a 15 teamer versus 12 teamer. Yeah. So,
yeah, and then like you look at some of the names that we're going to discuss on this, or maybe not discuss, but they're here. Like you got your Nolas, your Luis Castillo, Zach Gallen, Sandys, Flaherty. There's a bunch of guys here that make it an interesting situation.
This could be the obviously the Yesavage episode, but this could be the new Colson Montgomery episode where after every pitcher you ask me, would you rather trade Yesavage or whoever we're talking about? Let's see where the night takes us.
Don't tip me with a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's kick it off then. Again, we've got the top 40 according to NFBC ADP. I'll let Ryan explain it much clearer than I'm about to.
So we're flipping over to pitchers since there are so many more pitchers than any other position at hitters. We're trying to get a big pool here with 40, and then we'll do the next 40 on the next episode. But similar type of format that we have had on all of our review episodes. This is preseason entering 2025 ADP preseason rankings next to how they actually finished after 2025 with color-coded ERA, whip, and strikeouts. Probably should have added wins, but I always try and keep these boards as simple as possible while also showing information. Just a lot of numbers if you start adding more stuff on here. So I think two big takeaways for me, a few. The top three pitchers, Skeen, Scooble, Crochet, all finished in the top three. I don't think I've ever seen that before. I mean, that's more just like probably a one-off, but that's really interesting. Anyone on the Patreon probably saw Ben Tidd's excellent article where he compared preseason ADP versus end of season Rasball dollar values. And he's got a table near the end of that article at starting pitchers in 2025. If you went early at starting pitching, with always a few exceptions, but in general, the market performed very well hitting these early starting pitchers as a whole. There's always going to be, you know, your Dylan C's, Cole Reagan's that we'll probably talk about, but it was a very good year for the market finding these early starting pitchers. However, in Ben's article, he also included the previous two seasons, 2023 and 2024. The market was horrendous at picking and identifying early starting pitching. So it's always just a word of caution of like not trying not to overreact to 1 year, quote unquote, trends, because it's, you know, 1 year can't be a trend. So just thought that was interesting. If you are a Patreon member, please check out Ben's article. It's up on the site. It was really good. Last but not least, and I'll throw it back to you, Bubba. And this kind of goes along with Ben's point. 22 out of the top 40 starting pitchers finished in the top 40. So I probably should have looked at what previous years, like what that rate is, but over half, I think that's pretty solid for a position where so much can go up in air at really any time.
Yeah, majority of the guys, just quickly looking across the board here, like the big snafus were injury related, is what I would say. So not a lot you can predict there, but pitchers do have injuries. That is a common thing. You know, you have your Obers, who just completely disappeared from the face of the planet. So who knows where that went, but a lot of injuries, but as a whole, yes. What I like seeing here, honestly, is yes, the early picks, you get some elite ratios and all that good stuff. We talk about that on the previous shows every single season. But one thing I talked about a lot was strikeouts. You can get like these 200 K guys on the second half, like 21 through 40. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 over 200. There was like almost not, there was 9 over 185. It's almost half of your 21 or through 40. Yeah. Like 185 or more Ks, which is tremendous when you're looking at those type of numbers. And it also kind of, you know, you tend to make fun of me in a joking fashion that I like to wait on pitching. It worked out on this board, I'll say that much. If I started to wait towards that, you know, closer to pick 100 level of things.
Yeah. Cause you like to wait on pitching. Yeah. Like I mean, I remember your Beat Bubba OC. You waited till the ninth Peralta. Round to take your first pitcher, and it was Freddie Peralta.
Seventh overall.
The seventh overall. So why do I make fun of your ass? I don't know. I just like to.
And then Carlos Rodon was my second. Finished 10th overall. So,
yeah, there was a really lucrative.
Both over 200Ks, by the way.
Yes. Well done. Are you done? Keep victory lapping that one. You should.
Nope.
Those were good picks.
Nope. As you were.
Very lucrative pocket from like ADP 90, starting like Joe Ryan, Logan Webb, even Hunter Green, all the way down through like Pivetta at pick 137. A lot of those guys were very good. Joe Ryan, Webb, Green, Hunter Brown, Max Fried, Christopher Sanchez, Freddie Peralta, Brian Wu, Carlos Rodon, Nick Pivetta. Like that was a, there were some duds in there. I did not mention the great Aaron Nola in that list. There were some duds in there, but that was a very profitable portion of the draft in 2025.
Yeah, 7 sub-3 ERAs. Like, that's outstanding. Because, like I said, usually you know you're getting good ratios early on if the guy stays healthy, and you know it's going to dwindle, but these guys provided some elite ratios in throughout the deal outside of Nola, Castillo, Allen, Flaherty.
Nola's ERA is like the reddest red I've ever seen.
That is like still mooing red. It's going Aaron Nola. Yeah,
that's, oh shit, I forgot to cook the steak red.
Yeah,
601 ERA Aaron Nola. Damn,
yeah, he got cooked is what happened. Yeah, but otherwise, honestly, like, it felt like pitching was really bad this year, and maybe next week's episode will show us that it's really bad this year. But to your point and to what Ben discussed in the article, like, all in all, even the guys that weren't like elite, you still, like, Framber sucked in this, like, as the season went on, still had a 3.66 ERA and 187 Ks. Like, you wanted more from Framber, but he didn't destroy you like some other guys did. There's a lot of really good numbers out here. But then again, some of these guys with good ratios. Michael King, Glass now, Pablo, Snell, Burns, Reagans, they missed a lot of time also.
Yep.
So, yep. Any other takeaways before we kind of get into a more micro level analysis here of these players?
Let's micro it up.
Perfect. Yes, I'm using stats terms now. You're welcome. We're going to go pockets here because that's what we like to do on the show. Pockets of ADP. But we're gonna go with in pockets of five, as they, if you look at the graph that Ryan has on YouTube, it is in pockets of five. So that'll make it pretty simple for us here, and we could highlight all of them, or we could skip some. It depends. And early on, we kind of know we got Skeens, Scooble, Crochet. You mentioned they were the first three off the board, 10th ADP, 12th, 18th. So two in the first round, all finishing the top three. We went Scooble, Crochet, Skeens. The wins hosed Skeens. Then you had Wheeler at 4, finished 14th. Gilbert, 5, finished 27th. What do you have on this one? Because the top three guys just far and away amazing. Wheeler, great till he got hurt. Logan Gilbert was kind of an up and down, but in the end, again, finished quite fine.
That's fine. Yeah, I mean, Logan Gilbert is the lowest performer in this top five, but missed a ton of time. Inflated ERA, 3.44 ERA compared to 1.03 WHIP. That ERA should be lower when you look at that, and still brought the case. So just a couple of quick things. Yeah, super impressive for Paul Skeens to finish third despite pitching on the Pittsburgh Pirates, getting 10 wins. He was 10-10 with a sub-2 ERA.
The only sub-2 ERA on this sheet.
God. So super impressive to finish third overall. Crochet, just want to call out the kind of the anti-Verducci effect here. So it's always that year after a, and again, one player does not dispel or validate anything. Year one after a major, major volume spike where Crochet threw 146 innings in 2024. Yeah, he threw 205 last year in 2025, and skills did not skip a beat. So just want to shout out that one, as if you're looking to draft somebody who just had a big spike in innings in 2025 next season. Again, Garrett Crochet does not dispel that myth, but it's possible you can get even better and then not even fall back.
Yeah, he doesn't dispel the myth. We have other guys that support the myth as we go farther down the board. So yep. But to Ryan's point, and this isn't a preview show, but I'm still not comfortable with Crochet, as weirdly as that sounds. So a whole other topic for a whole other day. But Wheeler's dude got hurt towards the end, which sucked because he was, I think he could have challenged for the third spot, honestly, on this board just because of wins with Philadelphia. Skeens could have felt the like fourth. I'd love to go back and look where was Wheeler at the injury on this board, and he finished a 14th. He was on his way to being basically runner-up to Skeens in the Cy Young, and that's an interesting one as well.
Yeah, finished 14th, missed the last 6 weeks of the season. So then that somewhat nice part of that is you probably cut Zach Wheeler and you didn't have to stash or hold like you did a Logan Gilbert who was hurt at the beginning of the season. But yeah, I mean, a crushing blow, of course, but still to finish 14th, missing 6 weeks, that's certainly a fine pick at 22 overall.
And early reports are saying he might not miss much regular season at this point in time for 2026. And so far, I've 2-2 in drafting.
I know.
So let's go.
You're taking him in both your leagues.
Because he's going later than he has ever gone. Like, so I'll take the chance in these DCs where I can draft depth. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Next pocket, your 6 through 10, went from ADP 30 to 44. So basically round three. All went in round. This is something we talked about last year, looking at pockets of ADP. Like, you have a few stragglers in rounds one and two, and then people go hot and heavy, like rounds three and four with pitchers to load up. So we got Chris Sale, who finished 20th. Blake Snell finished 62nd. Both those guys had time on the IL. Corbin Burnes finished 76th, missed most of the season. Cole Reagans, 104 IL. Dylan Cease, just unlucky as lucky can be, finished 105. And that's just not my bias. We've both mentioned that on previous shows. Like, his skills are still very good.
I'll support that claim.
Yeah, his skills are very good, and I've already got a Dylan Cease share as well. So I have no – because he's going late, early. Like, I have zero problems doing it. I think he was my SP3 in one of my 50.
Jesus, so, what are you doing?
I'm loading up on a victory is what I'm doing. But, yeah, Sale, Snell, Burnes, Reagans all had different blurbs on the IL, and the Dylan Cease just – and he's a free agent. I'm curious where Cease lands.
Chris Sale, another example, not to beat a dead horse here, but another example of the year after a big upload, upturn in volume. 177 innings last year, got hurt down to 125 in his age 36 season. But similar to Zach Wheeler, like, while Sale was pitching and healthy, you were good to go. The problem with Sale is the injury was middle of the season, right? So I remember I dropped Chris Sale. Yeah, he got hurt. Yeah, June 19th, fractured his rib against, I think it was against the Mets, right? It was like going after a
he fell. He was running
or something.
Yeah, it was like a slow roller. He fell and, yeah, or he dove for a bunt or something. Yeah, something stupid.
Freak injury is kind of the takeaway there. And Chris Sale missed, I want to say, yes, he missed over 2 months. He missed over 2 months of the season and still finished 20th in his age 36 season. That's,
skills are very
pretty good damn impressive. Yeah, skills are elite. So,
well, 165 Ks and 125 innings at 36 is pretty good.
Yeah, yes, it is.
The dude still had a 26% K to walk. Like, his skills almost mimicked the 2024 season that put him on the map. Like, everything's almost in line with that season.
Mm-hmm. Last thing, I don't want to hog everything, but
no, you run with things. I'll just throw stuff on top, so you're fine.
All right, cool. Just the Corbin Burnes injury. I know Corbin Burnes was a fade for both of us. I don't think we expected this. This is just a cautionary. Someone who just signed a big contract, age 31, kind of still in his prime, coming off innings pitch totals of 167, 202, 193, and 194. Goes under the knife for Tommy John. It's just like, if we can't trust Corbin Burnes, and again, we were off of Burnes more for the skills, the fastball, the lower strikeout rate and whiff and that sort of thing. But man, did not think he'd go under the knife for Tommy John surgery, given, you know, so much repeatable volume in previous years. If we can't trust Corbin Burnes to stay healthy as a starting pitcher, who can we trust?
Amen. And that was one of during draft season, like, yes, this is the most trustworthy guy we have out there. So yeah, that was a big, and going home, all those storylines just did not work at all. I want to talk Cole Reagans for a minute though, because Cole Reagans was having quite the weird season is what I'll say. He's another one that had high ERA, but all ratio indicators suggested, no, this is not who he is. WHIP was one, like, respectable, like pretty solid. And he had a 30% by the end of the season, almost a 31% K to walk, which is awesome. He had the shoulder injury, but came back and made three appearances, which I like to see as well, totaling 13 innings over those three appearances, allowed four runs, struck out 22 over those innings. So he came back and looked very dominant again, which was good to see. I think he's one of those guys that, yeah, anytime a guy's got a shoulder injury is not great, but now let's talk Pablo Lopez. Let's talk about some of those guys that we've always been scared of. Like Cole Reagan's still had the strikeout stuff, even when he returned. And the old adage is like, he came back to the mound. Some guys don't come back to the mound. He came back, he made three appearances. He got a decent amount of innings, honestly. Like 18 innings is nothing to laugh about. It's almost as much as your Savage had. So like, like here we are. So I just want to highlight that. Cause yeah, the 4.67 ERA, albeit really bad, there's really no sugarcoating that. It's a 2.52 Sierra to go with that 30.4% K to walk. Cole Reagan's was still filthy last year, like really good, just a couple outlier things. So I just wanted to highlight that. Yeah, he finished 104 at the position. Yeah, he only had 61 innings pitched. He had that injury. But he, when pitching, still pretty dang elite.
Yeah, and I do want to hit on the, yeah, he came back at the end of the season thing, because that was, and it's a little bit of a different thing, but Jacob DeGrom last year, folks that were in on Jacob DeGrom entering 2025, the he came back argument at the end of the prior season was very important for folks that were in on Jacob DeGrom. A little bit different because DeGrom, right, this was recovery from Tommy John, whereas Cole Reagan's, there was no surgery. It was just a rotator cuff strain. But, yeah, I don't think, I mean, from a skills perspective, Cole Reagan's is just as good as he's been. You've got questions on the volume. But, again, I always question myself every year. It's like, should we even be in the business of trying to predict starting pitcher volume? Just take the best pitchers and let the innings chips fall where they may, as Chauncey Billups would say.
Yeah, make it rain, baby. Make it rain. Yeah, so really curious there to your Jacob DeGrom point. He leads the next pocket of ADP, 11 through 15, ADP 47 through 62. DeGrom finished 12th at the position. We're definitely talking about him. Yamamoto finished 8th, and he is about to be the 4th, if not 3rd, pitcher off boards very shortly. Schwellenbach finished 30th with injuries. Framber Valdez, 39th. Michael King, oh God. Bad mattress and all, finished 80th. I say oh God because Ryan's laughing for the reasons. I'm pretty like the injuries he had were next level things there. But let's start with DeGrom because you mentioned like Reagan's had 18 innings pitched this year to finish. DeGrom only had 10 and 2/3, so it wasn't even like a big sample. Right. But they slow played him coming back just like the Royals slow. Like they gave like Reagan's like two extra minor league starts. Like the original date that he's come, because I remember covering that all the time on the news deals. So they really made sure. Another reason I'm kind of like, okay, I kind of trust what's going on here. They did that with DeGrom the previous seasons where I'm going, that the Rangers did. Yeah. And he came back. Jacob DeGrom, we had the discussion last year, Ryan. You like had your little your sheet out with the projections, like if he throws 70 innings, if he throws 100 innings, so on and so forth. And like I think we came out to, okay, if he throws 100 innings, you're going to be close to getting your ADP value. Jacob DeGrom threw 172 and 2/3 innings. That is absolutely insane with a 2.97 ERA, Ryan. He had a 3.32 Sierra, so it wasn't even that far off. The only thing that slipped a little bit was the 27% K rate, which for him is a slip, still very good. And his walk rate went up a bit compared to recent seasons, but still a 22% K to walk. The dude threw 172 innings. This one surprised me. 37 years old.
Yeah.
37. Did not think he was that old. So I'll stop there and let you have more Jacob DeGrom runway. But what he did, I obviously have said multiple times here, Twitter, everywhere, I get the big L for this one because I stayed far, far away. But, oh, man, impressive stuff.
Yeah, I shared that L with you. I mean, I had no DeGrom. I was just worried about the age and the workload. And 172 innings after throwing 40 the two previous seasons combined. Yeah, this wasn't vintage DeGrom, but you can't expect vintage DeGrom when you're 37 years old. And vintage DeGrom is pretty much like a god in terms of how good he was. So, yeah, if you drafted DeGrom 11th, got 12th value back, like that is a huge, huge win. So congratulations. I had zero DeGrom.
One of the other things real quick, I remember this very clearly because I was in Anaheim when he was giving up home runs to what's his name? He got cut like 3 days later playing third base. His only home run of the season, old guy. I totally just skipped my mind now.
On the Angels?
Yeah. No one knew why he was playing all the time. Utility player. That's killing me right now. It'll come to me. But it reminded me his second half was pretty bad, and I wonder if it's a combination of the age, the extra workload. Like he has 2.32 ERA in the first half, again, different than the HQ that we talked about last week splits, but 112 innings in the first half, through 60 innings in the second half at a 4.18 ERA.
Yep.
He saw his strikeout rate drop from a 31% to a 25% strikeout rate, K to walk below 20%. In the second half, he was still good, but there was definitely a drop off in overall production. So kind of curious if he was just running out of gas from not pitching. Like, it wasn't even just last year where he had 10 innings, Ryan. It was 30 innings in 2023, 64 in 2022. He hasn't thrown over – the only time he's thrown this many innings was back in 2019. So it was quite a workload bump for Jacob deGrom.
It was. I think I my opinion on the second half slide, and it's good to bring up, is I think it was mostly just home runs and homer to fly ball luck. Homer to fly ball in the first half was 9%. Second half was 18%. Nobody really holds an 18% homer to fly ball rate unless you're Bailey Ober. I don't think this was a thing of DeGrom running out of gas. Swing strike rate was up. Velocity was up in the second half. So I think, gave up a few more fly balls. I just think more of them left the yard than should have.
Yeah, okay. I got to look this up. So, yes, Jack Neto hit one. I remember seeing that. They talked about that here.
This mysterious angel third baseman.
Oh, no, I need to see who this is because this is going to kill me because I remember I was –
Where's Bert? He listens to these shows.
I got up to get a beer because I knew I wasn't too concerned about it.
I know who you're talking about. I remember we were making fun of him.
This is gonna kill me. I'll figure it out eventually. I won't keep dragging this on. But who else you got here? We got. You want to talk Yamamoto for a second, or are you good there? Because this guy is the topic of conversation right now between his crit. No, it wasn't Tim Anderson or Chris Taylor. I'll keep looking. Yamamoto. Dealing in the World Series, if it wasn't for you, Savage, we'd be talking Yamamoto all over the place. Now that's the discussion. Is he pitcher four? Does he jump skeins because of the wins? So on and so forth.
Yep, certainly a case to be made for Yamamoto. I think he is that mysterious fourth starting pitcher that everyone likes to speculate on for 2026 at this point in the offseason. But it could make an even bigger case. What I think I love the most about Yamamoto this season was obviously the volume going up to 173 innings. Ground balls, man. Love the ground balls. It's the way to my heart. 53% ground ball rate for Yoshinobu Yamamoto and 21% K to walk. Everything supported what he did. And this is another one where like, oh, I don't want to take Yamamoto. He didn't throw many innings in 2024. I'm funny. I crack myself up sometimes.
Yeah, I was with you too, and I'm all in now on Yamamoto. I just looked it up, and I saw that Michael hasn't had it. It's Kevin Newman. Kevin Newman.
I was thinking somebody else.
Yeah, that's well. The Angels have a lot of those, but sorry.
I actually was thinking Chris Taylor. Yeah, that's who Burks put in the chat. Yeah, but
Chris Taylor, when that was not him. But yes, Yamamoto seems to be the dude. I am a believer. I apologize for not being a believer beforehand. And I think he's definitely worthy of a second round pick right now coming up this draft season. He seems pretty darn good. I'll talk Schwelly for a minute. Schwellenbach, he was the 13th off the board, finished 30th. 3.09 ERA, 0.97 whip, 108 strikeouts. Those 108 strikeouts that came over a whopping 110 innings before he had an elbow injury. Never had surgery on this, but he started throwing live batting practice towards the end of the season, never rejoined the rotation. So that's kind of not ideal. He was out since the end of June, so never pitched the second half, essentially. Looked really, really good early on, even like 108 strikeouts to 18 walks. Like, that's beautiful. A 4% walk rate along the lines. Like, love Schwelly. Not sure about this injury situation, but it looks like we should be good to go to start the season, but it's one of those should have had surgery, didn't have surgery. How do we feel about that situations? But it was a good season, just one of the many we're going to talk about that kind of got cut short.
Yeah, and just a weird, I'll obviously need to dive into it more in the offseason, but it wasn't like your typical elbow injury. I mean, it was a fractured elbow. It wasn't like a, you know, like a tendon strain or anything like that. So I don't really know. But Spencer Schwellenbach had a lot of smart people in his corner entering 2025. You were kind of shooing away the track record because it wasn't much for Schwellenbach, but certainly deserved the success that he had up until the elbow injury, and just a tough one. But still, again, to miss that much time and still finish 30th is damn impressive.
Framber Valdez, you know, had a great start to the year, finished horribly, screwed over his backup young catcher. Seems like an actual horrible teammate. By the way, other people even talked about him. It seems like it's almost might be a known thing around the league after that took place. Some rumblings that were being said from past teammates or opponents about Framber Valdez. He's a free agent, so that's not the best time to probably piss people off, having to go look for a deal somewhere else. But another guy, like I said at the beginning of the show, the 3.66 ERA, not bad. 1.24 whip, you usually hope lower for Framber because of the ground ball rate. Got you the 187 Ks, but it was one of those, like, if you had him in head-to-heads, he destroyed you in the second half of the season, at least the last month or so.
Yeah, it was rough. I'm pretty sure Framber, he's been pretty open about, I know he's been working with a sports psychologist and anger management and that sort of thing. So an unfortunate slip up, like that was pretty brutal to watch. And quite honestly, hitting your own catcher intentionally, that's costing him a lot of money, I think, in free agency. It's just
because he should have at least come out and like taken the fall for it. That would help a
that's
lot.
That's the PR. Yes, the PR, and that's not even an anger management thing in that moment. It's the PR cleanup left a lot to be desired afterwards. Yeah.
Like we'll if just you say that. Just flat out said, I effed up.
Just come out and say,
I shouldn't have, like, I've been, just come out. Right. But no, he blamed his catcher for it. that's not good. Not good. Good, Bob.
Not great.
And then I got nothing on Michael King because we've talked about him a ton. He was supposed to come back, never came back. Came back, shouldn't have come back because, oh, God, that was bad. So I don't even know what his deal is at this point in time, but I hope he has like a new mattress sponsor or something, because I don't really think that was the real injury. But that's what they're using. That's
how it all started. If you're a mattress company or pillow company, I don't think you're in San Diego. I don't think you're looking at Michael King for sponsorship. I don't think it was that either. It's just too weird of an injury. And then he was out and just disappeared for too long. He was humming right along, I thought. I had him in labor. He was my SP1. And all of a sudden, just the next day, he was gone.
Imagine how much you would have won by if he stayed healthy. Goodness gracious.
Or if I took, this pocket of five, DeGrom, Yamamoto, Schwelly, Framber, and King. Guess who I took the most? Framber and King by far, and didn't have really any Yamamoto, DeGrom, Schwelly.
If I went early pitching, it was either Cease right before this pocket or it was Schwelly, Valdez, King. I pretty much skipped the DeGrom,
Yamamoto. Some Reagans too, I thought.
Yeah, I had Reagans in one of my auctions. I think our listener league auction for pretty cheap. It felt like $22 or something.
Yeah,
good times. All right. Pockets 16 through 20. They had an ADP of 64 through 80. Spencer Strider finished 139. Part of that is because he started the year late on the IL. Part of it, he really wasn't that great. Tyler Glasnow finished 56. Pablo Lopez, 57th. Tanner Bibee, 68th. Bryce Miller just off the map at 237. So all in all, some of these guys weren't horrible for you, but most of them had injuries or none of them really paid off their value. Let's put it that way. None of them. Like, this is the pocket that you like to walk away from right about here and take an outfielder or a shortstop or something else. So let's start with Strider, because this is the one we're going to probably talk about a lot this offseason in general, Ryan, but we can give a initial thoughts on what took place here. Threw 125 innings, made 23 starts. That's good. Good stuff there. 4.55 ERA, not great, because it had a 4.15 Sierra, so the didn't really back it up with much you'd like to see, at least in my opinion. We saw the 24% K rate much lower than we're used to. So it's basically a 15% K to walk, which is pretty darn atrocious for anybody, let alone Spencer Strider. Now, first year back from the injury, do we take the grain of salt approach, the brace procedure, all that kind of stuff? Where are you at on Strider, like with what he did last year? We don't have to talk 2026 a ton, but what you saw last year, because I'm worried, but I'm also like, it's a guy coming back from a big surgery.
Yeah, I'm worried too. Spencer Strider needs to. I mean, it's all about the K's for Strider. He's never been a huge command guy with great walk rates, so he needs to strike out in, you know, kind of the 30%. I mean, peak Strider was 38-36% back in 2022 and 2023 respectively, and then yeah, that tumbled obviously to 24 last year. Velocity was down. This was not. I mean, the velocity was down It was down a ton from peak Spencer Strider. Was 95 and a half miles an hour on the fastball. Peak Strider was 98. Like, that's a huge difference. So I'm worried. You mentioned the internal brace. I was going to throw this back to you, but like, we don't know much about the internal brace procedure and how effective it actually is at folks. I know Scott did some work on kind of innings volume on that side, and that wasn't too much of a deal for Strider, but the actual, like, this was not the same guy. And similar to my Garrett Crochet example with like an inning spike, one player does not a trend make, but I'm at least suspicious of internal brace and how quickly people, because you get the procedure to come to not miss a year and a half, you get it to miss less than a year if the good doctor sees fit. But I don't know, man, this wasn't a great return obviously for Strider, but also I don't know if it's the most shining endorsement of the internal brace procedure either.
Yeah, I guess it makes you wonder, like, since it's a brace, it's half the time, is it just a band-aid?
I don't know,
we don't know, it's such a new procedure. Maybe it's just, who knows? Like, he basically surpassed, I'm pretty sure, all the innings Burks mentioned in his write-up he did last year. Most guys hadn't gone through like X amount of innings. I think Strider surpassed that pretty easily, but obviously didn't have the stuff to go with it.
Right.
I remember there was a point late in the season I just kept saying, just sit him down for the rest of the year. Like, he's already got innings. Like, the velocity was so bad. I remember watching one, I can't remember if it was their own broadcast or someone else's, that they flat out showed, like, anytime he threw a fastball, it was just getting crushed, like destroyed. And if he threw a slider, though, he was still pretty decent. Like, he at least got ground balls and swings and misses. So, yeah, there's a lot to wonder about him. Scary part, Ryan, spring training, if we see him pumping it right out the gate, that ADP is going to freaking skyrocket.
It's bad.
People will be all aboard. They'll start talking, remember Jacob DeGrom last year? Stuff like that. So just wait.
I like your I like that voice.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember that guy? All right. Anybody else here? Like I said, Glasnow, he was beat up, but when he was on the mound, it was filthy, but I felt like he was going to have surgery again at one point. That never happened. Pablo Lopez injured also, but was pitching great.
Yeah.
Bybee, I think he pitched better in the second half than the first half. Then Bryce Miller, yeah, we know that story.
Yeah, Bryce Miller, for me, was a pretty big fade. Just the skills did not back it up. I did not think, at least in 2024, I did not think Bryce Miller would fall off a cliff like he did, but he did. Bone spurs in his elbow, decided not to get surgery. I don't know. That I'm sure affected things for Bryce Miller. Pablo Lopez was a bummer because, like you said, he was humming right along, and then just instantly shoulder came back after being healthy for a good 2-3 seasons in a row with shoulder issues earlier in his career, and then those came back. Tanner Bibee, yeah, that's the most confusing one out of all these guys. I did not expect, we were both big Tanner Bibee guys, and did not expect a fallback like this. I wrote up Bibee for the Forecaster a couple days ago. He had a bad fastball. The fastball went from bad to horrendous. Yeah. In 2025, and I mean, just so bad. It's like a 4 or 5% swinging strike. That's just terrible. The fastball is not fooling anybody, and obviously that affects your secondaries, which are still good. But I don't know. The Tanner Bibee collapse is confusing to me, given the age, the track record, and all that.
Yeah, he's always been a guy. Like, I wrote about him a couple of years ago. The fastball is so bad, but at least in 2025, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. Like, he lowered the usage a lot. It went from, in 2024, is 43.4, lowered to 27.3 last year.
Yeah, more sinkers, though.
He used his cutter less. He used his sinker a ton more, like you at least in the right. And his looked like he ditched this. Or no, you used the sweeper more, too. That's what it was. The sweeper and the sinker both got a lot more usage. So the sinker is obviously not going to be your strikeout pitch. You're hoping the sweeper is, that hasn't. So he needs to go back to, he has a pretty good sinker. He's got a great changeup and his off speed stuff's good. He just needs to figure out how to make that work.
Yeah.
All right. 21 through 25, Bailey Ober. Do not, he's on my probably DNL, do not draft list right now. Good Lord. even though, we'll talk about Bailey Ober finished 214th at the position. Shota Monaga finished 34th at the position. Joe Ryan finished 16th. Logan Webb, 19th. Hunter Green, 21st. You mentioned this pocket being strong. We just mentioned you could have skipped the last pocket, moved on, and been much happier. Like I said, I'm pretty much done with Ober until proven. Otherwise, I was a big believer in him, and nothing that I saw gave me any hope at this point in time, unless he has a facelift. Maybe I missed it, but I'm pretty much out on him. But the rest of the guys, all aboard that train.
Yeah, I'll spare the Bailey Ober debate for an off-season show because I probably will be back in, depending how he looks in the spring.
Well, he'll be
but
free.
I just hate myself, so I'll draft Ober and Nola together. And
you would, yes,
yeah. So, but yeah, we'll shelve that for 2025 at least. Bailey Ober, this was so damaging because it not only was a 5.10 ERA, a 1.3 WHIP, you pretty much had Bailey Ober in your lineup the entire time. Velocity was way down; it was at 90. Almost said 90 degrees for some reason, 90 miles an hour, hip injury. For me, that's the big thing. How much did that affect things? Can an off season of rest help Bailey Ober, who I think was pretty obvious was pitching hurt and that affected the velocity. So we'll see, but no matter what, just a terrible, terrible season. If you drafted Bailey Ober as an SP one or two, and I did in a couple spots.
Yep. Agreed. Showed a very strong showing. Still has an issue with the home run ball, which is a bit concerning. And the strikeouts were much lower than I'd like, like 117 Ks, given he missed time with the hamstring injury. But still, wasn't a massive strikeout guy. Like that, we didn't see that. So I'm kind of wondering there. But, like I said, Ryan, Webb, Green, love them all. Webb, led baseball and or the NL in innings, strike. Like, I think the NL is strikeouts because he had pitch schemes. No, he had more than schemes. So I think he had the NL lead in strikeouts too.
He had more K's than schemes.
224 to 216.
Wow.
No, Webb was ferocious because I've said that about Webb every year we've done a show, Ryan. When people say he doesn't do this or that, well, Webb's different almost every year because Webb just pitches. He does, it's a different setup every year. Like if you look at his pitch mix changes every year, it's a different dude. So just realize you're going to get a workhorse that usually gets you good ratios, and you hope you get the K's. This last year you did. We'll see next year. But, yeah, I like all these guys. I just wish Shota – I need to figure out what's wrong with the strikeouts there with Shota. Other than that, I'm pretty pumped on the rest of them.
Yeah, the strikeout issues with Shota are pretty rough. I think we'll always – I don't know. I think could be undervalued because we don't focus on whip as much as we should, and Shota is a whip beast, 0.99 whip. Like that really does help a lot. You mentioned the home run problem, but, I mean, whip counts just as much as – ERA, and a home run is, in terms of whip, home run's the same as a walk or a single. So, you just need to pair Shota with a bunch of high strikeout guys, and they could work. I don't have too much else to add. Like, Hunter Green could be a top five pitcher in all of baseball. Probably is when he's healthy. It's just
it's
always the question with Hunter Green. That's why he finished 21st. Could have finished much higher, but had a 0.94 whip, 276 ERA. Awesome, awesome season for Hunter Green.
Yep, most definitely. 26 through 30, Aaron Nola finished 222 on the list. Bryce Miller was the only one that finished worst in the top 40 on this list. Aaron Nola had the highest ERA on this sheet. Just throwing that out there as well. One of the highest whips as well, third highest on this board. So great year for Aaron Nola. Hunter Brown, looking at you, Ben Tidd, finished 5th on the season. Max Fried finished 11th, which was a smoke and mirrors 11th, but he got it done. Robbie Ray, 41st. That kind of dwindled as the season went along for Robbie Ray because he started out like a gangbuster. And then Christopher Sanchez, your boy, 6th on the season, absolutely filthy year. So two top six pitchers, ADP 93 through 101.
The Max Fried comment, I don't know if it was smoke and mirrors. Why do you think it was smoke and mirrors?
It was more just like you're waiting for, not you. Most of us are waiting for the other shoe to drop with Max Fried. As the season went on, his indicators looked better. Like his 3.6 ERA at the end of the season is good. It got better as things went along. But I was just looking at a guy, 8.7% home run to fly ball, which I guess if you're a lefty is better in Yankee Stadium, of course. But a guy that perennially gave up a lot more home runs because he's given up fewer fly balls this past, like actually gave up 30% fly balls, the most since 2022, but also like the fewest home run per fly balls outside of 2022.
Yeah.
So I was just waiting for other things to go wrong. 17% K to walk doesn't scream ace to me. So there's a lot of balls in play with Max Fried, but he kept getting it done. So like I was always waiting for it to blow up, but he actually got better as the season went along, to be honest. Like the strikeouts, the games, I'll give him that credit. Earlier in the year, I was waiting for just the blowups to take place.
Yeah, and I think I was always waiting for a forearm injury, and that's why I was always off at Max Fried. But hey, he threw 195 innings. I mean that's why Max Fried, the two reasons why Max Fried finished so high in the Raider is it was good ratios, but it was 195 innings of good ratios. Like that's a lot. And then 19 wins. I think he led the majors in wins.
Yes, he did.
I think we had a 20 win guy this year. So 19 wins is, yeah, like not, I think, I forget the exact number. I remember Ray Murphy said this on an HQ radio episode at the end of the year. There were not many, I don't want to say the wrong number, but there were, I want to say less than 10. There were not many pitchers who had more than 15 wins in the entire league this season. And for Max Fried to get 19, that that separates him quite a bit. And you can't really depend on that to happen again. Like, yeah, you're going to get a bunch of wins on the Yankees when you have a 286 ERA, but is it going to be 19 again? I don't know. But still, 19's huge.
Yeah, just looking at this sheet. So you want 10 or more? How many wins did you want?
15 or more.
15 or more. Yeah, there's seven. It's Fried, 19. Rodon, 18. Crochet 18, Peralta 17, Webb 15, Lazardo 15, Brian Wu 15,
and that's it. Like that's crazy. Like that's crazy. That's a very low number for 15 or more wins.
Yeah, I just want a couple minor things on Max Fried real quick. Is the innings he pitched this year most of his career? So that's to your forearm question. Impressive, 195. 32 starts, first time in his career. So, yeah, he continued to cook. 31 years old. I've always been a Max Fried fan. I was really worried this entering the season with Max Fried, so not a lot of shares. But one more thing I got in this range. I mentioned we had the fifth and sixth guy here. Aaron Nola doesn't exist. The other four pitchers in this range, at least 186 strikeouts. So I'm going to keep just hammering the strikeout thing home. Is impressive. Two of them over 200. Hunter Brown. And now the floor is yours for Christopher Sanchez, who had 212 strikeouts, 2.5 ERA, and a 106 whip.
Man crush on Christopher Sanchez. He is the cover boy of the show art, just because I love Christopher Sanchez.
And he makes the covers for art, so yes.
Yes, and my elite graphical expertise there. But yeah, Christopher Sanchez, I was waiting and waiting and waiting for the strikeouts to come. It's always been kind of an elite ground ball. Really good control. Like I love that as a stable foundation. You're always going to pitch well if you keep the ball on the ground and you don't walk anybody. Christopher Sanchez took the next step up this season with a huge K rate, 26% for him. That's massive. It was 24-20 the previous two seasons, and it was backed up 14% swinging strike. So you always, like, if you see a jump in strikeouts, look at the swinging strike. Did they miss bats? That correlates very closely with K's, and the swinging strikes for Christopher Sanchez were absolutely there. So awesome season for Christopher Sanchez. This is another one where, I don't know if you remember, because this ADP that we're looking at is main event ADP. Christopher Sanchez was one of the highest risers in the main event compared to previous drafts. And I think a lot of folks were off of Christopher Sanchez because once people start rising in ADP going earlier and earlier, people get scary. This is one where the market, like, you could not have taken Christopher Sanchez early enough. Looking back, so hell of a season for him.
Well, I remember, like, because I liked him as well. You sold me on him a long time ago, but when he passed Freddie Peralta, who we'll talk about in a minute, I was like, I'll just take Freddie, which still worked. I'm not saying it didn't work, but it's like, no, I'm gonna take the guy I know has done this before, then not the other. So, great year for Christopher Sanchez, really excited for 2026. Burks in the chat, 9 pitchers have 15 or more losses. Crazy, more pitchers had 15 losses than 15 wins this season.
Yeah.
Hashtag baseball.
Yep.
All right, 31 through 35, we've got Frederick Peralta finished 7th the position. Luis Castillo, 38th. Just boring, but really good 38th is what I'll say there. Zach Gallen, 108. The second half helped out a lot there. Sandy Alcantara, 194. That was just a wild ride.
And the second half helped a lot there, too.
Yes, yeah.
It was even worse. And then Brian Ruth
finished 4th. Yeah, because Gallen and Sandy, I dropped both of them in most formats, and still glad I did, but they did have decent second halves, which we'll highlight in a minute. But I just had a quick note on Freddie. People are kind of like wondering, is he worth the price because he doesn't go deep, this, that, and the other. He had 17 wins, but 33 starts. It's three straight seasons of at least 30 starts. 176 innings. He's got 165 or more in three straight seasons, which, you know, he might not ever be the 200-inning guy, but give me 175 in this culture we're in. 19% K to walk. His walk rate's been up the last couple of years, but so has his strikeout rates. Just fine. You're good in that regard. He did overachieve slightly with a 3.68 Sierra, so that's fine if you want to argue that. But Freddie's just consistently putting it together out there on the bump. We'll see where he pitches next season. If he's in Milwaukee for the full season, that's another question for another day. But okay. He'll be 30 years old next year, and I still have full faith in Freddie. Like, yeah, any pitcher can get an injury, but it seems like there's always enough people that are skeptical of him where he always comes in at a – it feels like a nice price tag for Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, I remember debating you on Peralta quite a bit. Like, you really love Peralta entering the season. I thought he was fine, but I remember talking him down just because the second half of last season was pretty rough. And rough in terms of strikeouts and velocity. When I see that drop, I start to get a little bit nervous. And Freddie Peralta blew that away. So I took Christopher Sanchez instead. So I guess maybe we both win. But
yes,
no, hell of a season for Peralta that I did not think was coming given the late slide the previous season.
The last thing for Peralta, just like another kind of like steady Eddie thing. Hopefully it doesn't go the Corbin Burns route. But since 2021, it's been a 2.81, 3.58, 3.86, 3.68, 2.70 ERA. None of that's killing you. Like you're surviving in that regard. You prefer not that 3.86 one, but you can make it work. And he's basically had an 18% to 24% K to walk over that rate with whips at 112 or below, in a 1-2-1 in 2024. Otherwise, it's been 112 or below. Like, that's just as consistent as it comes for five straight seasons.
You love Freddie, don't you?
Yes, I do. I will defend him. Could you tell? At least he didn't. Well, I'm just going to stop there. I'm not going to bury Aaron Nola anymore.
Come on.
And then... I'll quickly say something. Brian Wu, I was so far wrong on that one. The guy was supposed to have like surgery three different times, it felt like, in the previous season. So I'm like, I'm just going to stand back and watch. And I did stand back and watch a potential Cy Young winner if it wasn't for Tarek Skubal. So, good Lord. I still won't draft him this year. Like, I'm terrified of that situation. That's all I want to say on Brian Wu. Hell of a season. Not sure how he did it. Just crazy good stuff there.
Now, if you'd have told me that a single pitcher in 2025 had whatever it was, 24 straight starts of 6+ innings, I'd be like, no way. If you would have told me it was Brian Wu,
I would have been like, you had offered, yes,
smoking something. So yeah, 186 innings. Did not think that was going to happen. 4 1/3 in the playoffs. I wish it was 5 1/3. Would have gotten Springer out game 7, but we will move on from that. Even though we won't.
Or will.
Hell of a season from Brian Wu. I was off on that one. Luis Castillo, just everyone rags on the guy. Finished 38th. Like, let's go. He's fine. The ceiling's not there, but no. You throw that many innings in Seattle, like, you're probably going to be decent. So, fine with Castillo with that output. Sandy, I think, is the last one I probably want to bring up. Probably talking about all of them anyway, but I don't know. For as bad as the first half was, did seem to kind of shake off some of that Tommy John rust in the second half. Was quite a bit better in the second half, to the point where I'm interested next year. I don't think this is ever going to be the Sandy pre-TJ. That the whiffs were not there for Sandy in 2025, even in the second half when he got a lot better. Maybe they can come back next year. Who knows? A year or two off of TJ, but at least a nice recovery from Sandy in the second half.
Yeah, I liked what we saw in the second half. I'm still wondering if I want to be interested, though, just because he's such an accumulator, and if he's not going to dominate, like, does he accumulate what you need? But then again, he's not the same price tag, so another story for another day. I just want to highlight something else on Luis Castillo, since I am one of them that buried him often. Boring is beautiful is something we talk about a lot on this show. And I might need to embrace this when it comes to Luis Castillo. Not all of your pitchers, Ryan, because some of them, like Aaron Nola, suck. But Luis Castillo, similar to the Freddie Peralta discussion I just had, since 2021, it's been at least 25 starts, 30 or more in 3 out of 4 seasons, at least 150 innings pitched. ERAs are all below 4. Last 3 years, 3.64, 3.34, 2.99. Like, very serviceable there. Even the whips, 118, 117, 110, 108, the last 4 seasons, all very serviceable. Strikeouts are slowly dwindling. The last, I guess, 22%, 24, but then back-to-back 27%. So that's slowly dropping down, which comes with the age, and boring is beautiful. He'll be a free agent this year, but I did at least want to highlight to the fact that one of the reasons I know you liked him is boring is beautiful, and he's about as consistent as it comes in your ratio departments when he's out there on the bump.
Just say boring is beautiful again. I didn't hear it kind of good boring enough the first couple of times.
I love it. I love boring is beautiful. That's probably one of my problems with my OCs. I need to stop with boring is beautiful. 15s, yes. 12 teams, no. Last group here, 36 through 40. Talk about a roller coaster of emotions. Jack Flaherty finished 106th position. Yeah. If he faced a really good team, he dominated. If he faced a bad team, horrible. That was documented in the Discord. It was a
oftentimes. Oh, man.
Yes. Yes, every start. Carlos Rodon finished 10th. Nick Pivetta finished 13th. Sonny Gray, 47th. Obviously, the Dylan Cease conversation there. Much better than those numbers showcased. And then George Kirby finished 58th. Lots of injuries. Maybe got it going towards the end. I still was never fully bought back in as the season went on Kirby. But you've been a Kirby guy. So board is yours. Flaherty, I'm just probably should stay away from for my own sanity. But what are your thoughts on this list?
Nick Pivetta, probably first and foremost. We're going to talk about him a bunch at first pitch. He's on your pitcher panel, by the way.
He's on my list. Yep.
Are you the leadoff for Pivetta or no? Somebody else?
I believe. I'm probably not. I think so. But I'll check. I'm curious.
For as much as I've liked Nick Pivetta throughout his career, had never thrown a sub-4 ERA season until this year. He'd throw a 2.87. So Nick Pivetta still has never had an ERA in the threes. So.
I do have Pivetta.
Okay. You're the leadoff on Pivetta.
Pivetta, Ober, and Cade Horton are my leadoffs. The guy said I'm never drafting again. I get to lead off.
You're leading off on Ober? I gave you Ober?
Yes, you gave me Ober. So that'll be... Dude, yeah, I told you, I'm there for the comedic relief. You picked a good one.
I'm glad you're on this. So it's Bubba. It's a... For folks not going to first pitch, I know I'm missing out. But for folks that are... It's Bubba in the bat flip. So Toby reunited up there, and then Pollock and Spore on the pitching.
So a fireside flip.
Yeah, fireside flip on Saturday morning at 8:00 a.m. 8:10 sharp.
Yeah, I'll be wearing sunglasses on stage.
Yeah, won't be the only one at the conference 8 a.m. So anyway, I won't steal your first pitch thunder from Nick Pivetta, but it finally happened. For Nick Pivetta, and I love to see that. Sonny Gray's interesting to me because, yes, he got unlucky in terms of the ratios, but you could also argue that Sonny Gray got lucky
in the strikeouts, yes.
In the wins.
The wins, too, yeah.
So we just mentioned how 6 people got more than 15 wins or something. Yeah. Sonny Gray had 14 wins with a 4.28 ERA. Like, yeah. It's kind of interesting. The luck kind of tilted more in wins, even though he did pitch better than a 4.28 ERA. Just had a bunch of really bad blowups that inflated that ERA, but pitched well overall, I thought.
Well, let me, as I scroll through his game log here, let's put it this way. Out of his 14 wins, only one of them was a blowup. He got 6 runs in one of them. The rest were all quality starts.
Yeah, so maybe he wasn't even that unlucky. Maybe the ERA is inflated just because he had so many bad outings.
Like, he had 1 outing against the A's, 6 innings, 7 runs, no decision. He picked up a 5 innings, 6 runs versus the Yankees. So when he blew up, he blew up. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I recall.
Yeah, no, I'm with
that. Sonny Gray.
Plenty of shares here, too. Yeah. But when he pitched, like, outside of the blowups, like, it wasn't like he's blowing up and he's just throwing mediocre games. Like, he
pitched well. Yeah. it was a roller coaster, highs and lows for Sonny Gray. And at the end of the day, this was someone I remember, like, I had drafter's remorse by opening day, because remember, he was terrible in spring training. Velocity was down. He revealed that he was hurt at the end of the previous season in the spring. Yeah,
full Zach Greinke on us.
You full Freddie Freeman. Oh, I punctured my rib in the postseason last year.
Yeah, I took a lot of late shares of Sonny Gray at that discounted price.
For him to finish 47th, yeah, that's fine.
I'll take it. Yep. Pivetta, Rodon is a guy I circled heavily in draft season, so I'm happy with that. 309, 105, 203. He had 18 wins right behind his teammate, Max Fried. I circled him for a guy with the 200K upside, hoping ratios didn't crush me. That did not happen, so very pumped on the Rodon story as well.
And the, as you mentioned earlier, the 18 wins, second behind only teammate Max Fried. That also does a lot of heavy lifting for your year-end value.
Yes, indeed. There you go. A quick run through the 40s. We didn't deep dive into all of them. There'll be much more discussion on pitching throughout the coming weeks on this show. Don't you worry about that. But we highlighted a lot of them. If you're in the Discord, if you have more questions, let us know. We'll talk about them more in the next episode if you like. But final thoughts on this board before I hit a couple listener questions for us.
Yeah, no, fun topic. I kind of like the format of just kind of picking and choosing a few guys and diving in there. Yeah, I mean, after talking through a bunch of these players, definitely like a pretty good year for the market in that top 40. You're always going to have your blow-ups, your injuries, that sort of thing. But I feel like there was more good than bad if you went early at starting pitcher in 2025, certainly compared to the previous two seasons.
Completely agree with you. Let me get to our show questions because I always have it up and ready, of course. Straface 23 says, how many starting pitchers should go in round one this upcoming year, do you think? Probably, it's always like two, maybe three. I'm going to go two.
Yeah, I'll probably say three. You never know. Any draft, there could be fourth if Yamamoto gets helium. You never know. But Skeen Scoobal, I think for sure. Probably Crochet as well. And then Yamamoto probably a little bit after that.
We'll go deeper into this conversation in our preview show in a couple weeks for like probably like a month for pitching, month and a half. Good discussion this past week in the Discord about the top four pitchers and some very nice people saying Skeen should be fourth on this list. And I don't disagree with
very smart people. Yes.
Yeah. So it's a discussion we'll say when we have more time to discuss per se and more maybe digging in on our parts to kind of have a better basis besides just pointing out some obviouses, but very interesting discussion points on that.
Yep.
Straface 23 also says, how much does league size matter when determining when to fire on SB? 15 teams and deeper, get aggressive quick.
Yeah, I just think the replacement level in 15 teamers is so bad that you have to take on some risk of going early starting pitcher, because yeah, if you lose them, it's rough to replace, but if you hit them and they do what they do, you're in great shape in a 15. Whereas a 12, well, I'll let you speak to the 12s, but yeah. Like, as we talked earlier, you waited till the ninth round to take Freddie Peralta, and then you took Rodon, I think you said, and that worked out great. So you can be a little less aggressive, I think.
You can be less aggressive, plus that draft took place in February, so ADP hadn't really shook out yet. But in 12s, you can play the game more as replacement value throughout the deal, not ace replacement value, but replacement value nonetheless. 15s, I'm usually not as aggressive as some guys are. Some drafts it will be, just depending on how it flows, but I like to have at least one by round five, like I try to. But it's also another reason why I've really grown. It's only been a couple years of doing it, but we've talked a lot off air between me and Ryan, why I really start to love these auctions now, because you, like, on paper it looked good when I went and got like Cease, Reagans, and Ober for like the price of an ace and a half. I really like that kind of idea. Like, you can build stuff like that, which you can never do in a snake draft. And so there's just another, like, the 15 team auctions is just a whole other level there.
Cannot wait for our listener leagues to come back.
Yeah, soon enough. It's not that far away.
I know. I mean, honestly, like,
we'll be getting, yeah, sending out the emails pretty soon.
2 months. 2 months. We're going to open up signups.
Yep. Mailman Mike says, how far down the list are you comfortable targeting your SP1 in a 12 team versus a 15? Just kind of hint on that a second ago. So I'm like round five at the latest for 15s. I don't know. You're usually round, what, three at the latest?
Usually round, usually I want to have one in the first four rounds. Though last season I waited till the fifth in some spots.
It was because outside of like the top three or four, it seemed like it kind of all started mixing together at a point.
Yep. Pretty much always want to have like three in my top 10 though, be pitchers. It's That's easy fair. To fall back on pitching and it's tough to, as we'll probably see in the next show, it's tough to, tough to make up, pitching if you don't have it up top. So, usually my first one top four ish rounds and then three of the top 10.
Every year when we do these kind of reviews, it reminds me why people say draft pitching early. And it's like, oh yeah, that's why. Got it. 10-4. BP says, I have Joe Ryan at a very affordable keeper price.
Nice.
Anything about his underlying stats that would make you think his 2025 output is not repeatable? Take the cheap price.
Take the cheap price. Enjoy it. And don't sell it, for sure. My biggest – yeah, we didn't really talk about Joe Ryan. My biggest concern with Joe Ryan entering the season was volume, because he ended 2024 injured. And I don't think he came back at the end of 2024, if I somehow recall that correctly. But threw 171 innings last season, 3.42 ERA, 22% K minus walk. Like, Joe Ryan is fine. He's going to give up. He's going to be a little bit homer prone just because he gives up, you know, fly balls. But again, it's a somewhat minor wart compared to the rest of the package.
Completely agree. And Ryan, that'll do it. Another episode in the books. We've made it to the mound. Got the ball rolling. We'll spin it on Tuesday and try to see if anything good comes out of it, because it does get rougher. It does get rougher as we get going there. But final thoughts. Weekend coming up, Halloween. Most listeners to this Halloween or after Halloween. So they got that going for you. Got World Series Game 6 on Friday night, if not Game 7 on Saturday night, if all fails. NFBC is going to roll over their formatting, I think, what's Monday next week?
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, apparently you'll have site design as well at some point. Yeah. So,
a lot going on out there.
A lot going on. We're making it through there's never doldrums for us at Bubba and the Bloom. We never stop. But we, once, you know, first pitch coming up and then 2026, we're getting there, people. We're getting there to where draft season starts to kick off. That's my only other final thought is, what do you think we'll be doing 1 week from tonight?
I was literally about to say, about this time next week, I'll probably be about 15 to 16 noons deep because golf
got moved off up. At 8.
Like, yeah, 8:30 about 8 a.m. So, like, and I'm just saying noons because we'll see what the bar has, but drinks deep at this point in time. Thinking it probably should have went to bed 3 hours ago because here we have a podcast the next day to do, but YOLO. As the kids say, 6-7 or something like that, whatever's going on out there. So what we're doing, we will be at the bar or the campfire, probably laughing and all saying it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, that's the correct answer. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything else, you'll need to be there to find out. With that, follow Ryan on Twitter. At Ryan VHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Andrick. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you guys on Tuesday with part two. This was part one of your SP review, episode 290. Catch y'all later.